Morning, today's daf in Zvachim is Lamed Dalet. We are in Lamed Gimel Med Beis. The Gemara spent the last couple of daf in discussing in detail the machlokes between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish based on the psukim in the beginning of Parshas Tazria. The Torah says over there, Bechol Kodesh Lo Sigo V'Mikdash Lo Savo, that when it comes to a woman right after having given birth, so she's not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash, and she's not allowed to, literally the Pasuk says, touch Kodesh. Now what exactly does that mean, touch Kodesh? So we had already a number of versions of Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish in terms of what exactly that means. One version that we had that takes us all the way back to Lamed Beis and Lamed Beis is that the discussion over here was Negiya B'Mikdash and Bia B'Mikdash, meaning partial contact and partial entrance, meaning, and this really took us back to the discussion of Bia B'Mikdash Shmei Bia Lo Shmei Bia, that if a person makes a partial entrance into the Azara while being Tameh, so is he going to be subject to an Isser? Is he not going to be subject to an Isser? And possibly, in other words, an Isser Kares. So we already saw Ula state in the opinion of Reish Lakish that, yeah, the Bia B'Mikdash Shmei Bia, and this is one of the supports for that position, or this is, I should say better, the support for that position, that just when it comes to contact, so Bia Negiya B'Mikdash Shmei Negiya, in other words, partial contact. Partial contact just simply means you touch the item. You're not touching the entire item, you're only touching part of the item, but that's contact. So Bia B'Mikdash Shmei Bia, so even partial entrance into the Azara is considered entrance, and as a result of that, a person would be subject to Kares. Okay, so that, and the Gemara spent all of Daf Lama Gimel, or I should say better, most of Daf Lama Gimel, discussing this viewpoint of Reish Lakish, quoted by Ula. With that stated, however, as we turn to Lama Gimel on the days, so we're going to start towards the top of the Amud. We did this yesterday, but this is a really good starting point. The Gemara says, Ki asa Rav and Amar Rabbi Abba Linyan Tamishanaga Bekoshitmar. Meaning, according to another version, Rav and coming in from Eretz Yisrael, quoting in the name of Rabbi Abba, that as far as Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish concerning, when they look at this pasuk at the beginning of Parshas Tazria, it is not talking about Bia B'Mikdash, it's not talking about Negiya B'Mikdash, but rather the reference over here is a tummy person coming into contact with Kodesh. The Gemara quotes the Machlokas, let's say you have somebody who's tummy and he touches Kodesh. Reish Lakish, Amar Loki, Rav Yochanan, Reino Loki, so it's Machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether so a person like that is going to be subject to Machlokas. Reish Lakish, Amar Loki, why? So here's the Pasuk. Bichol Kodesh Lo Siga. The Torah says that she, meaning the woman who's given birth, therefore is tummy, she's not allowed to touch Kodesh. And therefore, we learn from this pasuk that if I have somebody who's tummy who touches Kodesh, subject to Malkus. Rav Yochanan says that the person is not going to be subject to Malkus because the pasuk is not talking about Kodesh. The pasuk is only talking about Truma. We went through yesterday, I referenced you to yesterday's Shir. We went through yesterday the Rashi. First of all, how did Rav Yochanan know the pasuk is talking about Truma? Number two, if you're going to get Malkus for touching Truma, shouldn't you for sure get Malkus for touching Kodesh? Truma is on a lower level of Kedusha. Kodesh, which is carbon, is on a higher level of Kedusha. So if you're getting Malkus for touching Truma, you for sure should get Malkus for touching Kodesh. So see Rashi yesterday who addresses both of these questions. As far as question number two is concerned, we all know the answer, Ein Onshin Min HaDin. You don't punish somebody based on a Kal V'Chomer. So anyway, so according to Rav Yochanan, the pasuk is only talking about making contact with Truma. Reish Lakish Haikra Lahachu Da'asa Hami Bailei Azar La'ocha Basa Kodesh. So the Gemara says, now as far as Reish Lakish is concerned, doesn't he need the pasuk to teach me another halacha? Notably, achila, eating basar kodesh, while being in a state of tumah. The Itmar, the Gemara quotes another memra. Azar locha basar kodesh minayin. How do I know that there's an iser to eat basar kodesh, meaning someone who is tameh, eating basar kodesh, Reish Lakish amar b'chol kodesh lo siga. Reish Lakish quotes this very pasuk. So now according to Reish Lakish, we're not learning one, but we're learning two halachas from this pasuk. One, negiya, contact with basar kodesh, meaning somebody who's tummy. Two, achila, somebody's tummy eating Buster Kodesh. And so what is basically bothering the Gemara is, how could you be learning two separate halachas from this very one pasuk? Now Rav Yochanan agrees on this point. Rav Yochanan just simply disagrees in terms of where the derivation comes from. Rav Yochanan amar tini bardala asya tumasa tumaso mi bias mikdash malahalan anash v'hizir afkan in anash v'hizir. According to Rav Yochanan, it's based on Gzeira Shava. Rashi goes through the Gzeira Shava. We're not going to go through it right now. But anyway, what bothers the Gemara now is that according to Reish Lakish, from this pasuk of Bichol Kodesh Lo Siga, so we're learning now two halachas. How can you learn two halachas from one pasuk? So the Gemara goes on to explain. So as far as the tummy touching Kodesh is concerned, look, the Torah says, Bechol Kodesh lo siga. Even though, in principle, the Pasuk is talking about eating Kodesh, but the Torah, how does the Torah phrase it? What's the wording that the Torah chooses? Torah chooses to use the word negia. So from the word negia, we're extracting from there that if a tummy person touches Kodesh, subject to Malkus. And Azar la ochel, midi'ikish Kodesh la mikdash. And as far as now, how do I also know it's talking about achila? Because of the hekesh between Kodesh and Mikdash. The hekesh of Kodesh and Mikdash connects the idea of the person eating karban is going to be subject to makos as well.
It's not considered din in terms of deriving a karban punishment from din here, is it using hekesh?
But in other words, but that you could do. In other words, hekesh is ain onshin min adin, ain mazirin min adin. But in other words, by the other methods of limud, you can arrive at conclusions of onish. Absolutely, 100%. Tanya kavasi de Reish Lakish, the Gemara quotes a brisa supporting the opinion of Reish Lakish bechol kodesh lo siga azar la ochel. So here we have a brisa that really will spell out the sheet of Reish Lakish very clearly, that corroborates with the opinion of Reish Lakish. The Gemara quotes the pasuk again from the beginning of Parshas Zriya, Chol Kodesh Lo Siga Azar Lo Ochel. So that's a law in the Torah of not eating. Ato Amar Azar Lo Ochel Aino Ela Lo Geya. What do you mean? Is it eating or is it negia? Meaning the Torah doesn't say the word achila. The Torah says the word negia. So Tam Lomer Bechol Kodesh Lo Siga Ve'ela Mikdash Lo Savo. So and here the Braisa spells it out exactly like Reish Lakish presented it to us. Meaning, in the same pasuk, it says that you're not allowed to touch Kodesh, you're not allowed to go into the base of Mikdash. Mekish, Kodesh, or Mikdash. We have a hekish over here. Between Kodesh and Mikdash. Ma, Mikdash, Shavashesh, Bo, Natil Sashama, of Kodesh, Shavashesh, Bo, Natil Sashama. So when we're talking about going into the base of Mikdash, Natil Sashama. Meaning, somebody whose tummy goes into the base of Mikdash, subject to Kares. Same thing true regarding making, quote unquote, I'm going to use the language of the Torah. Same thing with Naga, when it comes to touching Kodesh. Again, touching is not the right translation in this context. But same thing with Negiyas Kodesh. So, Davishesh Bontil Shashama. So, the Ibn Nogeya. Now, if we're assuming that the word Negiyah means literally Negiyah, which it normally does, Nitil Shashama Mi'ika. There's certainly no courage for touching Kodesh. In other words, there's courage for going into the base of Mikdash. There's courage for being Tameh and eating Karban. So by definition, since the Torah places a hekesh between going into the Mikdash and Negiyas Kodesh, we know, but based on the hekesh, that we're talking really fundamentally about eating Kodesh. So the Gemara says, Ela Ba'achila. So, what do we have right now on the table? According to Reish Lakish, let's write the world according to Reish Lakish. So, I know that according to Reish Lakish, there's a lav in the Torah for somebody tell me eating Kodesh, Achilas Kodesh, how do I know that? Based on the pasuk of Bechol Kodesh Lo Siga, by the woman who gave birth, who is in a state of tumah, so the Torah says that she's not allowed to come into contact with Kodesh, but we know based on the Braisa, based on Reish Lakish, the Negiyah over there, that doesn't mean Negiyah, it means Achila. And how do I know that based on the Hekesh? The Hekesh equates Negiyah and Bia, just like Bia is something which has a Karis penalty, so too the Negiyah has to be a kind of Negiyah that has a Karis penalty, and that of course is eating. Just touching Kodesh, at worst, is a lav in the Torah. You're going to get Malkus. But in other words, it's not going to be Karis. That's how Reish Lakish arrives at that conclusion.
What can you go the other way and say that it's really Negiya, and you cannot eat without touching? So, it's a touch, you know, like if touching is forbidden, how could you eat without touching it?
All right, okay. I mean, the Gemara does sometimes come up with scenarios in terms of eating without making contact.
No, but somebody could put in your mouth, but it still comes.
All right. Fine, I hear, but that's the Gemara's conclusion. Okay. The Gemara says, Vakatimi Ba'ilei. The Gemara says, okay. But when all said and done, so far, according to Reish Lakish, now there are two lavim that's being teased out from the Pasuk, touching Kodesh and also eating Kodesh. The Gemara says, but there's actually a third halacha as well. Vakatimi Ba'ilei, the Tamashacha, Basa Kodesh, Lefnei Zrika. What about a person eating Basa Kodesh before Zrika Saddam? Now, here's what we all know. We all know that when it comes to a carbon, so in order to be, in other words, if it's the kind of carbon which we're going to be able to eat, a shlamim, or a chatas, or an asham, okay, various people can eat it depending on the type of carbon, but in other words, when can we eat it? Only after the avodas adam. Only after we do the dal avodas when it comes to the dam. Shechting, and then kabbalah, holacha, and zrika, and only after zrika. Zrika is the matir. It's what allows the consumption of the basar of the karban. prior to Zrikas Adam, we're simply not allowed to eat it. Meaning it's not nitar, it doesn't become permitted. What if a person were to eat the basar of a carbon before Zrikas Adam? So obviously you're not allowed to, but in other words, is there an onesh? So the Gemara says that according to Reish Lakish, there is an onesh. In fact, it's malchus. De itmar, and the Gemara now speaks out this machlokus. So here we have a machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, whether or not one in fact would be subject to malchus. Reish Lakish amar loka b'chol kodesh lo siga. And how does Reish Lakish know it? Because of the pasuk. So now, if you're keeping score at home, we have now three isurim that's coming out from this one pasuk. One is negiyas kodesh, two is achilas kodesh, and three, and while being in a state of tumah, and three now is eating from a karban prior to zrikas adam, and I should say better, a tummy person eating from a karban before zrikas adam. So Reish Lakish amar lokeb, the pasuk says sorry. Reish Lakish amar lokeb bechol kodesh lo siga. So loshna lifnei zrika veloshna la'achar zrika. And it doesn't make a difference whether it's before or after zrika, meaning a tummy person can simply not eat a carbon under any circumstances, even if the carbon's not nitar yet. And Rav Yochanan amar ino lokeb kidini bardala asya tumaso tumaso. So the Gemara says, and as far as Rav Yochanan is concerned, you're not going to get malchus because of the gzereshava of tumaso tumaso, which we'll explain better in just a little bit. V'chi kasavahu la'achar zrika, meaning, and that can only be la'achar zrika after zrika's adam. So, according to Rav Yochanan, well, let's do it now. Let's not wait. Meaning, according to Rav Yochanan, you're not going to get malchus for a tummy person eating a carbon before zrika's adam. Why? So the Gemara says it's based on gzeir shava. What's a gzeir shava? So let's take a look at Rashi together. Rashi, second line down on the Amud. Azara's tummy shalo yocha kodesh. The azara for a tummy person not eating carbon ama azaraso me onsho yafa the onsho laachar zrika hu velo lifnei zrika. Punishment for eating a carbon is only after zrika, not before zrika. Kidiktani bigmara bakamitz rabba. Rashi over here quotes from the Gemara Menachos. Yachu yichayavam alav mishum tuma lifnei zrika's damim. I thought that one would be subject to the kares penalty for tummy person eating a carbon before zrika's dam. Tamalomer kol tower yochal basar vanefesh asher tochal basar. Meaning in Parshat Tzav, in the seventh parak of Vayikra, you have two psukim back to back. One pasuk says that a tahor person has to eat karban, and then hanita l'taharim chayavim alav mishum tuma she'in nita l'taharim ein chayavim alav mishum tuma. Something which is permitted to a tahor, so then and only then would a tummy person would be subject to the penalty. If it's not nita for tahor, meaning if it's not allowed to be consumed by tahor, so then there is no chiyuv for a tummy person eating such a karban. Before Zrikas Adam, nobody's allowed to eat it. So therefore, Rav Yochanan is of the opinion, since nobody's allowed to eat it, so therefore it's not subject to any kind of penalty if anyone were to consume it. Even if a tummy person were to consume it, he'd not be subject to a penalty. It'd be aser, but in other words, but not subject to the malchus penalty. So what do we have now that according to Reish Lakish, we have three isurim learned from this one pasuk. So the Gemara says, Im Kain, back to the Gemara, Le Makra Bakodesh. If the Torah just wanted to limit us to two halachas, the Torah said, Uve Kodesh Lo Siga. My Bechol Kodesh Maminatarte. So the fact that the Torah says Kol Kodesh comes to include two Isurim. One for a tummy person who eats from a carbon, and two, a tummy person who eats from a carbon even before Zrikas Adam.
Yeah.
First of all, the Gemara on a number of occasions discusses eating a raw piece of meat. And number two is that you could quickly cook it up. In other words, it's shechted. In other words, and you know, you'll just, somebody will sit there and just keep, you know, so, you know, mixing the blood and whatever. Okay. Gufa. Tamisha achabasa kosher v'nei zrika reish lakish amar loka rav yochanan amar ino loka amar abaye. So here now, once again, the Gemara reintroduces us to the machlokes between Rav Yochanan reish lakish about somebody who's tamei eating from a carbon before zrika's adam. Reish lakish says you do get malchus, Rav Yochanan says you don't get malchus, and on that now the Gemara qualifies. Abaye says machlokes v'tumas agof. The entire debate between Rav Yochanan reish lakish is only when the person is tamei. Ava v'tumas basa devra hakol loka, but If the basar were itself tame, and a person were to be eating from this carbon, which becomes tame, according to everybody, both Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish, the person is going to get malchus. Why should that be? Damakra vaha basar. Going back to these psukim in Parshat Tzav and Perek Zayin, the Torah says, Veha basar. Veha basar is telling me about when the meat becomes tame. Larabos etzim lavona delabne achila. Ninhu. Now, when it comes to meat becoming tame, what else can be subject to becoming tame in the Beis HaMikdash? Even etzim lavona. Now, let's speak this out very clearly. When it comes to tumah, what is susceptible to tumah? So there are a number of categories which are susceptible to tumah, but in other words, that are mekabel tumah. But to put it succinctly, it has to be either a kli, a finished keli, or it could be an ochel, something which is a food, inedible. Those things are susceptible to tumah. If it's a raw product that's not a finished kli and it's not edible, it's not susceptible to tumah, meaning it doesn't fit into a category, and therefore it's not mekabel tumah. So when you're talking about etzim lavona, etzim are the blocks of wood that are going to be put up onto the mizbeach and use as fuel for the fire for the mizbeach. We're talking about lavona. We're talking about some sort of incense, some sort of spice, a frankincense. I think they translate in English, that is sprinkled on top of a carbon mincha. It's used for the ketores. So, and these things are both inedible, meaning both the etzim and lavona. They're inedible and it's not a kli. And therefore, in principle, should not be subject to tumah. Meanwhile, we know that these things, when used in the Beis HaMikdash, are in fact susceptible to tumah. Rashi points out, Rashi v'habasar. Rashi l'rabos etzim lavona l'tumas atzman dechki bas hakodesh machshar tam l'shavya uchla. In other words, there's this principle, this concept called Chibas HaKadosh. Chibas HaKadosh literally translates as our love for those things which have sanctity. But in other words, it's an expression that's used to describe these things in the Beis HaMikdash that are not food, but because they're being used in the Beis HaMikdash, they're going to be treated like food. Rashi's language is L'shavinu Uchla. It makes it comparable to food. The Avagav Dehanila B'nei Achila Ninu, and even though they're not edible, so now Rashi makes the following argument, which is really the Gemara's argument, which is, now, let's consider, if Lavona and Eitzim are not food, and yet coming with it is an ability for them to become Tamei, Basur Lifnei Zriko Lagar Minayhu. So now if I have meat of a carbon before Zrikas Adam, is it edible? Well, the answer, of course, is yes, it's edible. Are we allowed to eat it? The answer, of course, is no, meaning because we haven't done Zrikas Adam yet. But if wood and lavona can be subject to tame, and in the Beis HaMikdash they're going to be treated like food, subject to a lav in the Torah, where if a tame person were to eat it when they are tame, it's going to be subject to a lav, so certainly basar of a carbon before Zrikas Adam is also going to be subject to a lav if a person were to eat from it. There's another principle. Good question. I even know the answer. I'm so excited. There's another principle of Chibas HaKodesh. It's really just an extension of Chibas HaKodesh, that because of this principle of Chibas HaKodesh, there doesn't even need to be Hechsher. Right.
There's no intent, whether you intend to be.
Right. In other words, once they're being used in the Beis HaMikdash, so in other words, they immediately become susceptible to Tumah, A, without Hechsher, and B, even foods which are not foods. So the Gemara says, so v'abasal rabbos etzim lavona delav bnei achila ninu v'afilu hachi rabbi nekra, and the Torah includes them as well. So in other words, so according to Abaye, when we're talking about the item itself, in other words, if the item is tamei, so, and then when I say item, I'm speaking specifically over here about basal lifnei zrikas adam. So under those circumstances, Abaye says there's no machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Everyone would be in full agreement that if a person eats basar lifnei zrikas adam, when the basar is tamei, so that's going to be subject to malchus. The only machlokus for between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish is when the person's tamei. Rava amar machlokus b'tumas agof, ava b'tumas basar divra kol ein aloke. Rava goes in the other direction. Yes, Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish are arguing about tumas agof. However, if it's tumas basar divra kol ein aloke, but if the meat is tamei, everyone's in agreement. Rav Yochanan Reish Lakish, that there's no makos. My time, Kevin Dolo Karina Bay, v'tumaso olav v'nechrasa, lo Karina Bay v'abasar sheyiga b'chol tamei lo yochal. In other words, what we're doing is now, once again, we're looking at these two psukim in Parshat Tzav back to back. V'tumaso ala v'nechrasa lo karina bay, meaning if the person's tamei, so he's going to be subject to kares. V'habaser asher yiga b'chol tamei lo yochal. So the there is a clear equation between the food being tamei and the person being tamei. So under the circumstances where if the person were not tamei, if the person's tamei, then he'll be subject to kares. So we're also not going to say v'abasar asher yiga b'chol tamei lo yochal is not going to be subject to the malchus. So that means that according to Rava, both Abai and Rava will agree that before Zrikas Adam, since nobody's in a position where they're allowed to eat it anyway, nobody can eat it. So therefore, a tamei person cannot be subject to malchus if he eats it. The Gemara says, okay. But in other words, remember what Abai taught us just a couple of minutes earlier? Meaning, Eitzim and Lavona could be subject to a lav in the Torah if a person were to eat it. Meaning, again, they're not edible. But if a person were to eat it, a person would be subject to Malkus because of Chibas HaKodesh. So again, the argument we gave just a couple of minutes ago is that if you're going to be subject to Malkus for eating Eitzim and Lavona, you for sure should be able to get Malkus for eating a carbon prior to Zrikas Adam. So the Gemara says, "Hachem b'may skin k'gon shekitcha b'kli denasa kemisha karvo kol mati rav." So the Gemara says, "No, as it relates to Eitzim and Lavona, it's not that simple. That just they're not food, and yet you're going to be subject to malchus. Meaning, for Eitzim and Lavona to even obtain a status, there has to be a process. Specifically, kedusha b'kli." It has to be niskash b'kli, has to be put into a kli. The Mishnah over here, the Gemara quotes the Mishnah from Me'ila, kol she'esh lo matirin, mishikavra matirav, kol she'ein lo matirin, mishikidesh b'kli. When it comes to something that has a matir, like a karban, so then, once you're makriv the matir, so then it's gonna be subject to a lav. And when it's not nitar, meaning there's no matir, like wood, like Lavona. So Mishikadosh B'Kli, in other words, once you put it into a Kli. So what the Gemara is answering is that even when it comes to Eitzim and Lavona, it's not just they simply automatically become subject to a Lav, where if a Tamei person were to eat it, or if they become Tamei, you're subject to Malkus, but in other words, there has to be a process, specifically Kiddush B'Kli. The Lavona itself is a matir. The Lavona itself is going to be taken off the top and to be burnt on the Mizbech. But for the Lavona itself, there's no matir for the Lavona. It is a matir. Itmar. Okay. So, Adkan, that takes us to the end of the sugya from yesterday's daf. And so, a lengthy discussion in the Gemara between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish in terms of various lavim in the Torah. One is Negia B'Kodesh, touching Kodesh. According to Rav Yochanan, it's not a lav. Meaning, if I could say it a little bit clearer, I mean, according to Rav Yochanan, I don't know if I would say it's not a lav. It's not subject to malchus. That part is clear. Meaning, presumably, according to Rav Yochanan, it'd still be prohibited. In other words, we could say in the very least, the Torah doesn't want us to do it. But in other words, but Negiah B'Kodesh, touching Kodesh while in the state of Tumah. So according to Rav Yochanan, is not a lav subject to malchus. According to Reish Lakish, it is. Other second machlokus is Achilas Kodesh. Right? Eating carbon while in the state of Tumah. So according to Reish Lakish, that too is a lav. Now Rav Yochanan will agree on this point, that it's a lav, but in other words, where they generate the lav from, Reish Lakish gets it from the Pasuk of Bechol Kodesh, and Rav Yochanan gets it from a Gzer Shava. What about eating from a carbon before Zrikas Adam? A tummy person eating from a carbon before Zrikas Adam? That too is a machlokus between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Reish Lakish says you get malchus, Rav Yochanan says you do not get malchus. And the argument for Reish Lakish, again, I'm going to distill it right now, the argument for Reish Lakish is it should be no worse than Eitzim Lavona. Eitzim Lavona, if you eat it while in the state of Tumah, you're going to get Malkus. So, carbon before Zrikas Adam should be basically in the same category. And Rav Yochanan disagrees. Rav Yochanan says you're not going to get Malkus. Okay. Adkan, that takes us to the end of that sugya. Continuing in the Gemara Itmar, Hama'ala Evre Behema Tamea Agabe Mizbeach. Okay, this is not exactly related, but it's more debates between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish as it relates to carbon. And what if you take the limbs of non-kosher animals and put them up onto Mizbech? Reish Lakish amar lokav, Rav Yochanan amar inolokav. So here we have a machlokas. Reish Lakish says that's a lav in the Torah subject to malchus. And Rav Yochanan says, no, Reish Lakish amar lokav, Torah in tamei alav, alav abba mechlal, say alok in alav. So Reish Lakish says, look, when the Torah gives us instruction to take an animal and put it on the Mizbech, the Torah says, tahora. It has to be a kosher animal. So implied in that is that you can't put a non-kosher animal, and this is what we call in halacha, a lav haba mechlal asei. A negative prohibition that's learned deductively from the positive commandment. by virtue of the fact that the Torah says positively that we must put a carbon, a kosher carbon on the Mizbeach, so deductively we now know that a non-kosher animal cannot be put on the Mizbeach. And Reish Lakish over here says, and this is going to be a little bit odd, because we normally don't say like this, that a lav abba mechlal seh is going to be subject to malchus. And right now the Gemara is proposing that according to Reish Lakish you do get malchus based on a lav abba mechlal seh. Stay tuned, as the Gemara itself is going to wonder about that. Rav Yochanan amayin lokin alav, lav abba mechlal seh lokin alav. And Rav Yochanan's argument is what we're used to hearing, which is, no, you're not going to get malchus, meaning he agrees with every step that Reish Lakish took us through, but the conclusion. Meaning, you're right. Of course you're not allowed to put a non-kosher animal up onto the Mizbeach. And the limbs of a non-kosher animal cannot be placed on the Mizbeach. But that is only learned out deductively from the positive commandment, where the Torah says Tahora. So, you're right. But here's where you're wrong, the conclusion. Meaning, and because it's a love of Bava Chalas, that you're not going to get Malkus. That's Rav Yochanan. Most of Rav Yirmiyah. So Rav Yirmiyah says, what are we all talking about over here? Meaning, who argues on this point of lava b'amechla say is or is not subject to malchus? We know it's not subject to malchus. And Rav Yirmiyah quotes a braisa. Osa tochelu v'lo behema tameya. The Torah in Parsha Shmini goes through animals which are kosher, animals which are not kosher. And identifies for us which animals are kosher, which are not, which ones are not. And then the Torah says, the ones that have the simanim of a behema tahora, oso tochelu. So you eat these animals, which deductively, of course, means that if the animal does not have the simanim, then you don't eat these animals. Behema tameya v'lava b'mechlal se'aseh. And so right now, meaning the Gemara over here is only quoting one part of the Brisa. Rashi, I'm not going to go through it right now, but see the Rashi inside. Rashi goes to the second half of the Brisa. It goes without saying that if I eat non-kosher, I'm going to be subject to malchus, but that's only because the Torah goes on. The Torah goes on to say, and if I eat an animal that do not have the simanim, so then the Torah says, don't eat that. Meaning, but what the Brisa is just simply telling us is that if all I had was the positive commandment of asa tochelu, and I now know deductively that any animal that doesn't have the simanim, I'm not allowed to eat, if the Torah would have stopped there, there would not have been malchus. So clearly, the assumption is, a lava b'mechlal say, ain lokin alav, you don't get malchus for that. So Amalei Rav Yaakov le Rav Yirmiyah bar Techlif Asbar Ocha Beivre Behemet Tameya Dikolei Amalo Pligi. The Gemara says, okay, so let's take the etch a sketch and let's shake it up. In other words, clear it. The Gemara says, you're right. If you take the limbs of a non-kosher animal and you put it up onto the Mizbeach, everyone's in agreement. Kolei Amalo Pligi. There is no debate. You're not going to get malchus. It's a lav haba mechlal asei. And therefore, there's no makos. The Gemara over here says, I'll tell you where the debate rides. The debate rides on taking a chaya and putting it up onto the mizbeach, the limbs of a chaya. Okay, here's what we all know. In terms of animals, there are, meaning four, and we're talking about the four-legged creatures. So basically, in terms of division, so we organize it in halacha into basically two categories. One is behema, and the other is chaya. Even though the word behema in the Torah can be used loosely to describe both, but generally speaking, in terms of halacha, we have behema, we have chaya. Behema, we would translate in English as domesticated animals, and chaya would be non-domesticated animals. Now, there are kosher and non-kosher in behema, and there's kosher and non-kosher in chaya, meaning the Torah tells us that there are, in other words, all we need to do is just look for the simanim, and there are both kosher and non-kosher in both departments. In terms of, and just the simple examples, behema, right, cow, sheep, goat, and the in terms of chaya, so which of the chaya are we allowed to eat? The Torah gives us a list of animals that we're allowed to eat. Svi, ayal, right, deer, hart, H-A-R-T. So the so these are the animals that we're allowed to eat. So the there are halachic differences between behema and chaya. Behema, the chaylev, you're not allowed to eat. The chaya, the chaylev of the chaya, you are allowed to eat. Behema, there's no mitzvah of kisui adam. Chaya, there is a mitzvah of kisui adam. But in other words, but both of these animals are, again, if they have the simanim, both these animals are kosher. Meanwhile, when it comes to the Beis HaMikdash, the Torah says only behema. Only behema. In other words, so the animals that are fit to be offered as a carbon on the Mizbeach in the Beis HaMikdash, only from the category of behema. And notably, par and ayal and kevis and aes, right? Cow, sheep, and goat. Simpler said. So anyway, what if a person shechted a chaya in the Beis HaMikdash and offered it up onto the Mizbeach? So it's, in other words, is there going to be a penalty for that? So here is now where the Gemara resets the machlokas between Rav Yochanan and Reish Lakish. Ki pligi b'chai v'achi itmar. Rav Yochanan amar over ba'asei. So Rav Yochanan says you're in violation of an asei. Rav Yochanan says by virtue of the fact that the Torah is demanding that we put behema on the mizbeach, meaning behema to the exclusion of chaya. So this is what we would call lava ba mechlal asei. So you were mevatel a mitzvah asei if you take a chaya and you put it on. So that means to say that you can't do it. Now Reish Lakish amar eino over bivalo klum. Reish Lakish says you're in violation of nothing. Now in Reish Lakish, does that mean that it's okay, encouraged? I'll leave that open because, quite frankly, I don't know. Meaning, but certainly Reish Lakish takes a more relaxed position on the matter. What does that mean practically? I'm not sure. But Rav Yochanan amar over ba'asei behema in chay alone. And so we start now arguing on behalf of Rav Yochanan. Rav Yochanan's position really simple. The Torah says behema. Behema meaning en not chaya. Reish Lakish amar eino over alav bevelo klom ha'u lemitzvah. Yeah, the Torah says that you should put a behema up onto the mizbeach, but that means lemitzvah. Preferably. The Torah says preferably I like a behema. Chaya? Eh.
How does the word mitzvah became preferable? Can you do preferable? It's not a commandment.
Could it mean rishus instead of a mitzvah?
The Torah doesn't use the word mitzvah. Meaning when the Torah is telling us, the Gemara is using it. But over here, mitzvah, in this context, mitzvah means it's preferable. Right, Rashi. Ha'ula mitzvah, behema, mitzvah lahakriv. V'chaya, rishus. Meaning when it comes to a behema, that's instruction. And when it comes to a chaya, again, this is Reish Lakish's understanding. Yeah, you have an option. Right? U'miyu t'meya v'adeh lo d'chsiv, mimashki yisrael, minamuto yisrael b'per kamada menachos. Okay, and as far as non-kosher animals are concerned, out of the question. Right, the Gemara Menachos Rashi says we're going to discuss that. Okay, Mosav Rava. So in terms of taking a non-kosher animal, putting up onto the mizbeach, absolutely no. Malkus, also no malkus because it's a lava ba mechlal asei. So there's not going to be malkus. What about taking a chaya, a kosher chaya, and offering that up onto the mizbeach? Reish Lakish, Rav Yochanan. Or let me do it in the right order. Rav Yochanan, Reish Lakish. Rav Yochanan says it's a violation of a mitzvah asei, it's a bitul asei, and Reish Lakish says no, not a bitul asei. And the way Rashi seems to present it, meaning optional, sure, why not? That's okay. Most of Rava. Rava challenges based on the following brisa: Ilu nemar karban l'Hashem behema yisi omer chaya bechla behema. In other words, if the Torah's instructions were karban l'Hashem behema, meaning if the Torah just uses the word behema, as I mentioned a couple of moments ago. Behema in the Torah could be understood as a more general description of all big four-legged animal creatures. King Yishanem, Razosa Behema, Sher Tochelu, Shorsa, Ksavim, Viseizim, Ayel Vitzvi. Go open up to Parshas Re'eh, and you're going to see the Torah says from these behemoths you're allowed to eat, and the Torah gives a listing. A listing of both domesticated and non-domesticated animals. So you see that the word behema is a term that could be describing animals in general. So, if the Torah then, if once we know that, and when we go back to the Karbanos and the Torah says Karban Hashem Behema, so I therefore would have entertained a very legitimate Havamina, that the animals that can be put onto the Mizbeach have to be kosher, but after that, could be Behema, could be Chaya. So, Tam Alomra, Bakavitzon, Amati Lecha V'lo Chaya. So the Torah says buck of its own, meaning we're just reading on in the Pesukim. So buck of its own comes to teach me that only domesticated, not non-domesticated. Yachol yavidim evi kasher. Okay. But if the Torah only mentioned it one time, so then we would have said, okay, preferably, like the Gemara earlier, lemitzvah. Preferably should be buck of its own, but in other words, but if I brought a chaya, so it's not so bad. Halamazadamal tamishamalo rabo haveli chitim. And the Gemara over here strikes an analogy. Look, it's like the Rebbe saying to the Talmud, like, bring me wheat. Maybe lo chitim visorim. And the Talmud says, okay, and he comes back with wheat and barley. So, she'enu kemavir el dvar v'lo mosif el dvarav. Now, the Rebbe asked me for wheat, I know, and I brought him wheat. But then, and more. So, over here, could be that same thing. Meaning the chai is just simply, and more. V'kasher tamalomer bakavitzon. Bakavitzon amayt l'chavalo chaya. So then when the Torah repeats itself and the Torah says bakavitzon, that is, the Gemara doesn't use the expression over here, but we've seen this time and again. Shina hakasov la'akev, that when it comes to carbon and the Torah repeats itself, that repetition is telling us that this is essential, meaning this to the exclusion of, over here, this to the exclusion of. So now, and we're striking the same analogy, but we're just modifying the language just a little bit. We're tweaking. Once the Torah repeats itself, you know what it's like? It's like the Rebbe saying to the Talmud, so, al tavili elachitim. In other words, please go get and only get for me wheat. Behavi lochitim. Visorim. She'inu kamosiv al-dvarav elakamavir al-dvarav. So now, when the Talmud comes back, and he comes back with chitim visorim, yeah, but the Rebbe says, listen, I only wanted wheat, meaning, and I was very clear I only wanted wheat. That's ki'ilu the Torah, when the Torah repeats. Right, sure. I'm sorry. Buck of its own. And the Torah repeats buck of its own. The Torah is telling me that I only want buck of its own and I don't want anything else. So it's elak hamavi al dvarav u pasol. So tiyufta reish lakish tiyufta. So the Gemara over here brings us down to a very clear conclusion that the Gemara accepts the opinion of Rav Yochanan, not the opinion of reish lakish. Offering a chaya on the Mizbeach is not advisable. In other words, it's wrong. Meaning the Torah doesn't want it. The Kadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want it. He only wants Behemah, doesn't want Chaya. So going back to a point that we just mentioned a moment ago in the Braisa entertained a Hava Mina where at least when the first time the Torah mentions Bakar Vitzon, we entertain the idea that, okay, with Chaya would be okay. It's only with the repetition that the Torah is very clear that with the Torah, that Hashem does not want a Chaya on the Mizbeach. And the Gemara says, and what is it like? It's like the Rebbe saying to the Talmud, bring me wheat, and the Talmud comes back with wheat and barley. Even in the analogy, isn't it a little bit strange? Meaning the Rebbe was asking for wheat, and the Talmud's like, oh, and you know what? And I thought you'd also want this. Oh, right. It's not what the Rebbe asked for. Even in the first stage of the Braisa, if you go back to the bottom of Lamed Aleph Medalef, and you look at the second to last Tosfos, She'enu kemavir al dvarav, where Tosfos over here is basically bothered. What do you mean, enu mavir al dvarav? He asked for wheat, and you're coming back with, sure, you're coming back with wheat, but wheat and barley, he didn't ask for wheat and barley. Alpha pisha einza mevi ela chai levada. And, says Tosfos, furthermore, I don't even understand the analogy to our discussion. Meaning, in our discussion, what's our discussion? You didn't bring behema and chaya on the Mizbeach. In other words, you just offered chaya on the Mizbeach. So it's not even comparable to the analogy. So ela chaya levada, kevin demirit sono mevi a karban. Meaning when the Torah describes bringing carbonos, the Torah, you're going to see this word come up again and again. Liritzono. Liritzono means, in other words, it's you're trying to make an appeasement to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So, in other words, when the Torah says liritzono, kevin demiritzono mevi ha-carbon, meaning you're trying to create an appeasement between you and HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So therefore, I might have thought that if the Torah is only saying it one time, And the one time is only there as basically a suggestion. So then, even if I brought a chaya, look, a chaya is a kosher animal. I'm allowed to eat a chaya, and I'm trying to create an appeasement between me and a Kadosh Baruch Hu. So Tosfos says that's also part of the Hava Mina, why we might have thought it would have been okay. Right. Correct. Correct, right there. There are midrashim that speak to the idea that one of the reasons why behema nachaya is because it makes it easier for us. Right. In other words, right. Correct. Right. In other words, right. The something that was not instructed, something that was not recommended. Gemara continues. Okay. We are on the very top of Lamed Aleph Beis. And a person is pasul la'avoda. And Rashi points out over here, what is the question? Mal shiyasa shirayim im kibav, second Rashi in the Amud. Im kibav azarak. So let's say, he accepted the blood, he did the zrika. Mal shiyasa akasha v'ikaba v'yizrok v'ikasher hakarban. Mi amrin and kevin de zarak pasul shavi ladam shebet savar shirayim v'su lo mechze lezrika. One option is what, as Rashi is entertaining the Gemara's question is that, look, once you have a non-valid person accepting the blood, during the Zrika. So maybe from this point going forward, any of the remaining blood, even coming out of the neck of the animal, we're talking about Dama Nefesh. But in other words, at that point in time, it's possible. The Vesul Mechzil Zrika, Odomo, or Rashi suggests, Lo Alima Zrika's Puzzle, Lishavya Dam Shabitzavar Behema Shirayim, Viachzor Akashvi Kapil, or maybe no. Maybe look, obviously, when the non-qualified person, meaning, let's say he's a czar. So if we have the czar doing a Zrika from the blood, obviously that's no good, obviously. But in other words, there's not enough strength in his disqualification so that we're going to look at all the remaining blood that's coming out of the neck of the animal as disqualified as well. So this is the Gemara's question. Bamine Reish Lakish Me Rav Yochanan Pasul Mashi Yaseh Shirayim Amrle Ein Oseh Shirayim Ela Chutz Uzmano V'Chutz Limkomo Ho Umeratzeh Lepigulo. So he says, no. What creates Shirayim? Something like Chutz Uzmano Chutz Limkomo, meaning Machshavas of Psul. So since there is a ritzu lepigulo, since it does, the avodas are effective in creating the status of pigul, meaning as we've said time and again, pigul only is created, only is affected when you complete all dala avodos. So since it has an effect, so therefore the rest of the blood is considered shirayim for this. But in other words, when you have a czar who's sprinkling the blood, he doesn't have an effect. It's nothing. Meaning it's not regarded as an action, and it does not affect the Shirayim. Razvid Masni Hachi, Baminei Resh Lakish Merav Yochan. Razvid has a slightly different version of the discussion. Kos Pasul Mashi Yaseh Shirayim.
You're saying it doesn't affect the Shirayim.
Meaning to say, again, I'm explaining the Gemara like Rashi. Meaning to say that if there's more blood that's going to come out of the animal, I understand that first rush of blood comes out pretty quickly. But at least in concept. In other words, if there's more blood coming out of the neck of the animal, so can a kosher person now come and collect that extra blood, that additional blood, and offer that on the Mizbeach? One way to view it is that no. Meaning once the apostle has taken that first rush of blood and did the Kabbalah and did the Zrika, that's it. Not only did he disqualify that which he did, he didn't even disqualify it, meaning it's nothing. But in other words, but at the same time also he disqualifies anything else that comes out as well. That's one possibility. And the Gemara said the other possibility, the Havamina behind that is that it's kind of like what we discussed a couple days earlier. Meaning when you do Zrika on the Mizbech on the wrong place, meaning you had one opportunity to do Zrika. You can't just simply pick up the blood off the floor and do it again. Meaning that was your Zrika. So maybe over here we could say the same thing. That was a Zrika, Right, correct, right. Regardless of who did it. That's one possibility. The other possibility is no, that's not a Zrika. He's not qualified. That's not a Zrika.
There's no
position
for Dichu here because...
Wait. That's very good. Very good. That's coming.
The
Shirayim of that particular Kli? Okay.
Right.
Correct. In other words, right. As Steve points out, the Kabbalah wasn't even good. Right. Okay. So Rav Zid Masni Hachi Bamin Eresh Lakish Me Rav Yochanan Kos Pasul Mal Shiyasa Shirayim. Rashi explains, Kigon, Shiyatsa, Mal Shiyasa Ladam Shabitzav Shirayim, Im Zarku Kohen Kashal Azar Velo Yehei Takan Lekarb and Shiyasa Vikaba. So let's say as follows. Let's say I had a Kabbalah Saddam, and it was done by a good person. It was done by a Kohen. And then the first cup was taken out of the Azara. So obviously now we have a psul. We have a psul of Yotzei. So that blood obviously cannot be used. So here now, same question, just different application of the same question. What about now more blood coming from the neck of the animal? Is that going to be considered shirayim? And therefore, we have now, if there's any more blood coming out of the neck of the animal, can that additional blood be used? It's not, meaning it can... It's not the same question, but it's the same basic idea. If the first Kabbalah becomes disqualified, can I now go back to the source and get any more blood? In the first version of the question, meaning we had the first cup not being disqualified, but in other words, somebody who's czar collected and sprinkled it. Here, it actually becomes disqualified through, just I'm using Rashi's example, through the psul of Yotzei. So, Mao Shiyasa Shirayim, Amrle Pasol Gufei. So, So the Gemara says, psul gofe, it's a psul in the, psul gofe ma'isvir olach. So, if it's a psul in the gof, meaning if the person himself is psul, so, e psul mashi shirayim kos psul nami mashi shirayim, e psul lo mashi shirayim kos psul nami lo mashi shirayim. So, here in this version, so the answer is, well, it basically would come along, it would tag along with the question of a person being unfit. Meaning, whatever you are going to say regarding the person being unfit, collecting the blood and doing the zrika, whether or not any additional blood that comes out is going to be usable or not usable, the same thing would be true regarding whether the blood itself becomes pasul. Okay, so that is another version of the discussion. Rav Yirmiyah midifti masni hachi ba minei abayi meraba kos ma shiyasa es chavero dichui o shirayim. So let's say we have a collection. Let's say the collection came in two different cups. Okay, in other words, so you shechted it, let's say a karmen chatas, and you collected the blood. And instead of collecting the blood in one cup, you collected it in two different cups. And now, basically, are the fate of these two cups going to go hand in hand with one another? If one cup becomes disqualified, what is going to be the status of the other cup? Rashi explains, "Kagon chata shekibal dama b'shei kosos v'nasim kol masosav me'echem em chaver shirayim hu v'nishpach liyisod dichsiv es kol adam yishapech." And over here, Rashi points out we don't even have to entertain the question of what happens if one becomes pasul, the other. In other words, over here, basically, are these two cups going to go hand in hand? Consider, says Rashi. We know that you do the zrika of one on the mizbech, and again, because it's a chatas, it's not really a zrika. It's an application in the four corners, but fine. We all. Another coin is holding the other cup. In other words, and after I do the application, so we also know what happens with the remainder of the blood is that it's poured down the yisod mizbech. It's poured on the base of the mizbech, and so now if it's collected in two cups, do I take now cup number two, which quite frankly right now I don't need? Meaning I already did an application. I already poured the first cup down the yisod mizbech. So should I now take the second cup and also consider that to be shirayim as well? Mashi yasas chaver dichoy shirayim. Amalei plugta de Rebbe Lazar, Rebbe Shimon, v'Rabbanan de Tanya. So the Gemara says this is in fact a machlokas. The Gemara quotes a brisa lamala hu omer es damoy shafech lamatu hu omer ves kol damoy shafech minan lechad shekipa dama barabba kosos v'nasa matana achas mizeh v'natana mizeh achas mizeh shekul nishpach liyisod tamal omer ves kol damoy shafech. So let's say I accepted the blood in four cups. And let's say I did an application from each one of the cups. So now the remainder of each one of the cups needs to be poured down the Yisod Mizbeach. The Torah says, Ves kol dama yishafech. Yachol nasan arba matanas mikos echad. Yukula nishpachim liyisod. What if I did an application from only one of the cups? So now do I need to pour all three of the other cups down the Yisod? Tamalam revez damo. Ha ketzad hanishpach liyisod vehen nishpachim la'ama. In other words, here, the Tanakhama's opinion is that from the cup that I did the application on the four chronos, so there, I take that cup and I pour the remaining down the yisod. What about the other cups? Just simply pour it in the canal, meaning it doesn't have to go in the yisod mizbech. It's not considered shirayim of the first cup. Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, Omer, Minan, the Chatosh, Kibodam, Abraba Kosov, Nasan Dalad, Matanz, Mikosecha, Shekula, Nishpach, and Liyasod. Tam, Omer, Ves, Kol, Dama, Yishafech, Vaxi, Ves, Dama, Yishafech, Amravash, Yahu, Lemuti, Shirayim, Shabbat, Savra, Behema. So the Gemara says, no. According to Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon, even if I only did the application from one cup, what I'm still going to do from the remaining three cups is, I'm going to pour that on the Yisod HaMizbech, on the base of Mizbech. All the three other cups are considered a shirayim of the first cup. And so therefore, they're all viewed, even though they are divided amongst four different cups, they're all viewed as the dam hanefesh of the behema. And so therefore, when the Torah instructs that I take the remainder, and I pour in the Yisod HaMizbech, the remainder includes not only cup number one, but cups two, three, and four as well. That's Rabbi Lazar, Rabbi Shimon. The Torah says that dam, not kol dam, that's savra behema. Savra behema meaning any additional blood coming from the neck of the animal, that doesn't have to be poured down the Yisod HaMizbech. That could just simply be disposed of. But in other words, the Yisod HaMizbech, that which I collect. And even if I collect them in different cups, it's all viewed as one unit in one collection. Okay, so the Gemara says, so here on this last question, so the Gemara says it's machlokas amongst the Tanaim. Okay, I'll stop here.